Hi, I'm Patrick Palm, and this is the Learn From Leaders podcast. In this show, I interview favorite customers and other interesting leaders in product development, marketing, HR, executive management, investors. You find favorite leaders in many different places and in organizations doing game development and publishing, software as a service and other tech companies and big enterprises, you know, going from very centralized command and control kind of organizations to a more modern way of working with a culture with high team autonomy and better alignment towards the company goals and values. So let's go.
Okay, Ben. So let's get to one of my favorite topics. How did we manage to mess up agile in game industry?
I've thought about this recently, and one of the things I wonder is when I was in the games industry and I was looking at development practice and, you know, how you organize, how you do process, these sorts of things, product management, et cetera, the vibe I got was that the games industry was 10 to 15 years behind. And when I say that, there were a lot of companies that were probably where the games industry was, but behind the, not just the bleeding edge, but like sort of the early adapters, early adopter curve, the games always just felt like they were really lagging. They had this way that they liked to operate. Like, we were still talking about the Kearney method, which was a way back in like PlayStation 1 and 2 days, I think. A guy whose name was Kearney, I don't remember his full name now, I feel bad. It was a really cool dude. He solved a problem, which was prior to his developing this new framework, every game that they were building was just attempted to waterfall it from start to finish. And that doesn't work when you're trying to create a compelling experience, because you're making this huge assumption that I know what it is before I start, and you don't. And so then you produce something that's not a compelling experience, but hey, we have to just stick to the plan. And so he had a different approach, which is you basically spend some amount of time, let's say half your dev cycle, which back then was like 6 months or a year, much shorter. And that whole time is just trying to figure out what is fun. And then you define everything, and then you waterfall the second half. And this was a massive leap forward for game dev in terms of their approach to development. But when you compare it to what some other, again, what the bleeding edge of software development was at, it was like, yeah, no, we already know this. We figured this out. In fact, we're past this. We're messing with things like agility, where you're kind of endlessly iterating and you're slowly refining what done looks like, but also realizing that like that might change too. And so I always felt like games were 10 to 15 years behind. So here's the thing with agility. From the Agile Manifesto in 2001, by the time you get 10 to 15 years behind, agility is already something that people are cynical about. Regardless of whatever value it may have brought, it's been structured and turned into certifications and rigidified and doing it's done a bunch of things that are not core to what the founders of the manifesto, you might say, were trying to achieve. And so by the time it gets to games and they go, well, maybe we should try this agile thing, being 10 to 15 years behind, already it's coming as a package, not as an approach to work. It's coming as a set of techniques or processes or tools. And already there's also this cynicism and this like, yeah, agile, ugh, everybody, okay, yeah, we're gonna, oh, look, CEO got excited about something new, we're gonna try agile now, right? Whatever it is. And that the core idea doesn't get translated because it doesn't make it into so many of those certifications and packages and sets of tools that you sort of interlink. The way I describe this in some of the teaching, and this was actually something originally by Ahmed Sidki, one of my mentors, video game development came at Agile from the perspective of doing it, like doing it as a set of steps versus being it, versus being Agile. We ask the question, how do you do Agile? Did you do Agile right? And it's almost a nonsensical question if you go back again to what Agile was trying to do, which was shift how we thought about and approached the work we were doing in a different way, where it's more about being that. Can you be Agile as you're thinking about work? And this is doubly sad for me because when I see video game development and I look at the core values of agility, I don't care. You can call them the core values of agility. You can make them up on your own. These are helpful things for game development. And I break it down into like four base pieces. One, are we focused on the customer? Are we really focused on the customer, trying to connect with them, understand their experience? Are we focused on delivering value, whatever that means? Are we focused on delivering? That's number two. Focus on delivering value. Three, are we collaborating well internally, interacting with each other well, letting the sort of creative processes that emerge when groups of people come together to solve a shared but unknown problem? Are we doing that well? And then fourth, are we responding to change? Are we adaptive? Are we continuously improving? I can think of, I don't know, maybe I could come up with a better one, but video games is like the perfect place to do all four of those things, to attempt to strive to be player focused and focused on value and focused on internally collaborating well to solve the shared problem and focused on responding and adapting to the change, because we deal with all of those to such a greater extent than so many of the industries that kicked off agility as a movement. And the other thing too that comes up to me is like Lean actually shares a lot of these same principles, but they came from the manufacturing world. And so you have this overlapping approach of like Lean and agility that both share the customer obsession, the focus on value, the reduction of waste, the different ways of resolving uncertainty, but the collaboration of the group together, and then the adaptability, the responding to change, the constantly iterating. And like, I don't care where you get your principles from. These are useful. And for video games, when people talk about agility, they think about things like stand-ups and user stories and story points and poker planning. They think about safe and release trains. And they're focused on the wrong stuff. And so what that means is that if you've listened to much of my podcast or seen much, I tend not to use the word agile a ton. Sometimes I do. Sometimes I've just gone and talked about this very directly. I tend not to talk about it a ton because I know that as soon as I say the word agile, there's a bunch of people that just switch off. Like, I've tried agile. It doesn't work. That doesn't even mean any. Like I've tried that approach to work where I'm customer centric, focused on value, attempting to work well with the people around me. And responding to change well. I tried those things and they just didn't work. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like one of the cheat codes of agility is that it gets to integrate whatever healthy practice you figure out. And it just goes like, yeah, that's just part of agility now. Because again, it's being, not doing. It's a way of thinking about the work. It's a way of approaching the work. Some people will say mindset and other people get mad. But whatever it is, I just call it an approach to work. It's a way of thinking about the problem you're trying to solve. And going like, okay, cool. How would we do this that in a way that maximizes our chance with whoever we are of succeeding? I think it has some big challenges built into it. Agility, we can talk about those if you want to. But at its base level, like this, if we could figure out how to approach work this way, I don't care what you call it, in game development, that would be unbelievably helpful to us.
So I remember, going back, 10, 15 years or so. I mean, there was quite a lot of curiosity, in the games industry about agility. Mm-hmm. There were, plenty of talks and roundtables around it at conferences. To be honest, I mean, I might be, I'm obviously a little bit biased here, but I think this, at conferences recently, there's actually not that many production oriented sessions at all, seems to not be top of mind now, which is in a way a little bit weird, because we are at the point when that actually makes a really, really big difference. I mean, we just talked about, live service, and that just puts a lot more strain on all of these practices. It's kind of like, the difference if you do these things right versus if you're doing it pretty bad, it makes quite a big difference on the outcome. And one thought that struck me was that I was at one of the big agile conferences that was not specific to gaming, the gaming industry, and one of the originals, you know, one of the signatories of the Agile Manifesto, Alistair Cockburn, which is quite a name, by the way. You know, he was saying, you know, he was doing one of the keynotes, and he was just like, you know, in not so many years from now, we're not gonna talk about agile software development anymore. It's just gonna be software development, and the question is gonna be more, you know, how well are you doing it? And mm-hmm. and I think there's a little bit of that playing in here, but unfortunately, I think in game development we kind of missed. I mean, we got to that kind of like cynical point that you called out. You know that. Associations are kind of, you know, wrong. And so I agree with everything you say about, you know, being agile is the point. And I mean, it resonates with, you know, now a pretty old quote from, you know, Mary Poppendick, that was one of the first evangelists about, you know, lean software development. I'm mm-hmm. not sure if I quote her exactly right now, but it was something like, don't look at how well you do agile. Look at what results you're getting from your agile practices.
Yes.
And I think that's kind of like nails it, you know, but this quote is pretty old now. And I think we are at a place, in the games industry, we kind of got that a little bit wrong. So on one hand side, I fully agree with that, but I would also say that some of the practices that comes with certain methods, if you take, you know, Kanban or Scrumban or extreme programming, or, you know, any of the practices that goes in under the umbrella of Agile, we're also, you know, it's a little bit unfair in a way to judge when we're not doing it so well. You know, if you mentioned stand-ups, you know, it's like, okay, yeah, cool. And yeah, a lot of people do stand-ups, but, you know, yep, you know, you as a pro here, how well are people doing stand-ups? Well, I mean, I would argue that a lot of teams aren't doing them that well.
They're doing terribly.
Yeah, so it's like, well, how can you diss stand-ups when you're kind of messing it up anyways?
But this is such a cool thing. Let me dive into this a little bit, because here's the challenge, right? I'm in the games industry, and as you said, 10 to 15 years ago, games industry started getting interested. But agility had already been packaged. And so I got some version of it that was like, do all these things. And so I was, I'm open to it, right? I'm a game dev. I'm willing to try new things. I got to figure this stuff out. And some dude who's now called a scrum master, he used to be my project manager or my producer or whatever, or my tech lead. He's now my scrum master. Okay, whatever. He comes in and he starts regimenting that every day I have to answer these three same questions. And every day we all go in a circle and we answer those questions. And I'm like, this isn't helping us very much, if at all. And when I bring that up, they go, yeah, but that's what we're supposed to do. We got to get these three questions. And I go, okay. And once a week, I hop into a room with the team, and someone throws a bunch of work, and then they make us rewrite it in a weird way. They make us use this weird form. I've just got work I need to do, and I know what I need to do. And they make me rewrite it. And so now I'm rewriting everything. So it's like, as a blank, I want blank, so that, and I'm like, okay, why are we doing it? And I don't know. I don't know why we're doing it, but I kind of go along. I'm willing to give some trust on this. This is supposed to be the new hotness. Like, this is where we win. And it's going to help us be more efficient. And I do this week after week, and I'm going to my standups and I'm answering three questions, and I'm really not noticing that anything's different. And I become cynical. And, you know, then stuff happens, and someone comes in and they look, and everybody says that this agile stuff is dumb. And, you know, we turn the scrum masters back into tech leads, or we fire the ones, and, you know, we hire a new consultant who's going to talk to us about some other methodology. Now we're on Six Sigma or something, right? But whatever, I'm like, oh, I'm glad that's gone, right? We can just go back to doing normal status reports every day. In fact, we're going to do it in Slack, and I can just tell people that it's going to take me 4 days to do this piece of work that I know I need to do. Gosh, my life just got easier now that Agile's not here. And so I show up 5-10 years after that person's had that experience. And I say, hey, I would like to try some of this stuff. And if I say I'd like to try agility, they go, gosh, really? We're back? Oh my gosh. Are we going to go through this again? Are we going to waste all this time again? Do you have any idea how bad that was last time? And so I always want to be really, really understanding of the developer, of the people, even some of the leaders inside of that system, inside of like a more complex system like SAFe, and going like, yes, I would agree to your point. They never did it right. They didn't know why they were doing it. It was not well explained. The people that were teaching them were people who maybe had gone to a 2 or 3 day training and gotten a certified scrum master or a professional scrum master or whatever cert. And then came back and were like, oh, I know how to do this now. We're all going to hop in a room and everybody hold up your poker planning card. Right. Oh, well, you have to do it just the right time. Oh, no, wait, hang on. That's too much. And it was a bunch of rules, and the rules didn't seem to be adding value. And so, like, I always, as much as I'm frustrated with that cynicism, because I think it is because we missed the point, I also want to give a lot of understanding to that experience, because some people have had that happen, not once, not twice, but like 3 times, 5 times, where someone's come in and said, we're going to make this team agile. Here we go. And they're like, thank heavens, a year later when that person gets fired and we get to go back to actually just doing the work we need to do. And that loop is so painful because they don't feel like one of the things that's big in agile is this idea that like you're empowered, you have autonomy to own your process, to change, to adapt, to figure stuff out as a team. But so often that is one of the first things that gets lost in the transition of not being, but instead just doing. They feel no agency. They feel, you're afflicting your team with your new system every time you change something. Are you willing to do that? Are you understanding the consequence of that? And so for me, as frustrated as I am with it, I understand where they're coming from and why they're cynical. And it's one of the reasons I just changed all the words so I could try stuff. And a lot of it's might have agile roots, but I don't focus on the fact that it's agile or not. I focus on like, is this helping or not? And when you approach the team in that way, when you come in with like my scrum guidebook or whatever, and I start, throwing down rules at them is what they're feeling. That doesn't work. When I come to them and I say, hey, I'm seeing this particular problem that relates to our effectiveness as a team. Can I help you solve that? Here's how I might do it. And they're open to that. Like the devs are often willing to change. Now, again, I think the problem with agility, if I were to describe it, is this idea that it will work anywhere. I don't know if that's true, because I don't know if everybody wants to work in a system that has all of what agile derived frameworks have in them. There are some people who don't want to be involved in the process. They don't want to be engaging with a retrospective. They don't want to be going to the review or giving the update or they just would like to do their work. And fundamentally in agility, we say, look, this isn't just about doing the work. It's about what comes out the other side. And for a lot of people that resonates strongly, but for some people it's like, look, I am very happy to let someone else solve that problem for me. If you give me a business analyst or a product manager or something, and they can solve like, is it working or not? And just tell me to do something different. If it's not, I'm really happy with that. I don't want to think about that. But in agile, there's this thing of like an agile team is one where everybody on that team is thinking in a product way around whatever it is they're doing. And I don't know, I think there are some organizations that don't have the people who are willing to do that. It's a question of like, are they capable or not? They might not be willing to. And in those environments, what do? You have to sort of abstract the agility out a layer. That's another random tangent. So, and yes, I completely agree with you. We do attempt something very badly, not give it much of a chance to work, not really know what we're doing, and then go, this sucks, I'll never do it again, too quickly. Simultaneously, my gosh, I'm trying to make a game here and you're throwing process at me that's getting in my way. Would you please stop it? I can understand that.
So, I'm not going to let you off the hook too easily here, okay?
Do it. Push me.
So, you did a podcast where you addressed, I can't remember the title you had on it, but it was very good. It was something like, how agile is failing your team or something like that.
Clickbait. You got to get the spicy ones.
it was good. And when you started the conversation there, it was very gloomy, but then after a while you get into a conversation around, basically how to get it right. But for someone, who's been you know, working with agile practices for quite a while, you know, I was like, well, you're really getting into like, well, you know, how to get it right, you know, the way it was actually intended, you know, and somehow, yeah. You know, a lot of these things have kind of, you know, morphed or whatever on the way. So, you know, I'm going to give you some examples here. So you dropped, you dropped the framework, you know, SAFe, you know, the Scaled Agile framework here before, you know, and I have always been one to think that one, you know, got things a little bit too bureaucratic, it's too heavy. But what's interesting, and then, of course, you know, earlier, you know, I would get pushback on that. People like, no, this is empirically developed. You know, it's like, well, you know, I don't agree. But anyways, what's interesting is that when they released not so long ago, SAFe 6.0, well, guess what? You know, they kind of went in the direction that I think they should have been going, you know, which is it's a little bit more lightweight, it's way more flow-based. And it's just so it, you know, they kind of understood themselves that, well, you know, maybe we're not going in the right direction here. So that was an interesting course correction. That's just a bit of a data point, you know, on this whole conversation. But another one which is maybe close to heart with game development is that, you know, we earlier discussed, you know, the challenges around alignment. You know, alignment is really hard in it's always hard, but especially hard in game development. And some of the practices I think are you know, pretty good around that. So I think yes. I think when a planning poker exercise becomes, you know, an exercise in, you know, trying to nail a perfect amount of story points, I think, you know, then you know, the main point is missed. I mean, the nice thing about the planning poker exercise, it's a good way to get people around the table to really swarm around, you know, is this a really big thing or not? What is everything we forgot to think about? You know, what it's, you know, so instead of on one hand side, you know, you run your estimates in a way where, okay, well, the senior person with this particular title is just deciding what it is, which has a lot of downsides. But at the same time, you know, you don't have that someone puts it in that doesn't really know. So you're really trying to create more of, let's call it like a knowledge transfer situation. And that can be very, very powerful. You know, I can just relate to that, you know, with Favro, you know, also when we have all, you know, various disciplines represented, when we're trying to figure out what does a certain new capability really mean, there's typically a ton of stuff that we realize. And, you know, one of my favorites is, of course, you know, the whole, when you get into a conversation, like the problem behind the problem. Yeah. And sometimes it can be quite hard to capture those things if you run things where it's much more, let's say, micromanaging. It's like one person who simply just decides. So, you know, being able to have that kind of conversation around the right things, which can be quite frictionless sometimes. You know, and you're definitely going to have people saying like, well, can I just go back to my desk and get stuff done? It's like, well, yep. You know, and I mean, we talked about this before, you know, like in a lot of situations, there's a tendency to rush into production too soon. And it's such a shame, you know, and it's like at least two, I would call it very agile practices that are like perfect fit for game development here. You know, one being, you know, really, you know, over-investing in an alignment. So when we actually are getting into more production, we kind of know what we're doing. And yes. And the second thing, well, actually, I'm going to give three things here. The second thing would be, I mean, one of the, you know, if you're making a game which is maybe not an iterative game, so let's say you're not EA Sports here, you know, you're doing something that you haven't done before. Quite a big thing to figure out when you're in stages before production is to figure out, like, you know, what does our, you know, various pipelines look like here? Is this going to look like, you know, when I did this the last time at, you know, the previous company I worked at, or is this different? I mean, we got some new tools, there's some other new technologies, you know, like, what does it look like? I mean, that's a lot of work. And done well, it's a highly iterative process. And a lot of what I would say lean thinking actually lends itself really, really well to that.
Yes.
But if you don't do that, and instead you're just like, we look down the pipeline in our Jira and we're just going to go into production and just do a lot of this stuff. I mean, that's when you get into a lot of the typical troubles that students are getting into nowadays.
Yes.
So, I mean, I can go on for a while here. I'm quite passionate about this, but I think, you know, a lot of these, you know, the examples I gave now, I mean, I could easily set an Agile label on it. It's like, well, the traditional way is to do it this way, and that's going to cause you all these problems, and there is a better way of doing it. And, you know, maybe you're right. Maybe it is dangerous to call it lean or agile because then people will have an allergic reaction to it. But, you know, if we do just do some kind of like first principles thinking here, just like, you know, what's the actual problem and what is a better way of solving it? We are going to end up in these solutions.
Exactly. And that's the thing. Something I forgot to say earlier, you mentioned Alistair Coburn and Mary Popendick. Both of those, if you're a listener out there, you should go check those two people out. They're phenomenal thinkers that will help you if you're in software development, game development, whatever it is. You should go check them out. They are thought leaders in a space that is filled with thought leaders. They stand above. So the other thing I'd say is, a couple things. One, that's really cool about Safe 6.0. I haven't seen anything about it, so I'm not. I can't comment personally, but I trust that like they did need to go, I think, more in a flow direction. That's really cool. That seems to be where they're going. The other thing is the systems that you pull off the shelf, right? Like take Scrum or Kanban or Safe as a package. My objection to them isn't that they don't work. In fact, one of the problems with them in my mind is that actually sometimes they work a lot better than what you had before, because often what you had before was either chaos or something completely overstructured. And so you bring in a very vanilla agile framework of some kind, like agile derived framework, and you get better results than you were getting. And you go, holy cow, it's working. And you don't realize that, yes, and part of the agile approach is that you keep iterating on that. But all the processes that I mentioned is like, these are the things, like I will very rarely allow a team in a game development environment to get away without doing a stand-up once a day. I consider the stand-up incredibly important. There's so much I need to see them doing well around collaboration and remaining aligned day to day. That like I've seen teams be like, no, we don't need it. We talk in Slack sufficiently, or we do this or the other. And I'm like, okay, if that's true, it will show. And then it doesn't. And I say, we're going to do stand up. And I start running stand up. And usually they're like, holy crap, we've never run a stand up like that before. And I'm like, well, yes, I understand that. And suddenly it's not as offensive to them. But there's this thing of like, to your point, I've done all these things. I've done like poker planning has its place. I'm a huge fan of retrospectives. I'm a huge enemy of bad retrospectives, you know, and I think it's one of the problems is that these solutions, the off the shelf agendas or frames or tools, I describe them as they're generic solutions for a specific problem. You have a specific problem you're trying to solve. A generic solution will get you some of the way there if it's a decent generic solution, but it is not built for your specific circumstances. And you need to adapt it. But to adapt it, you need to understand why the generic solution exists. And I think most people don't bother to do that. And so then what they do is they just go, well, I've got the generic solution. It kind of solved sort of the problem that I had. And one of my actual objections to, I think, say 4.0 especially, is that it solved the problems of the wrong layer of the organization. It was very much about like the leaders got what they wanted out of visibility into the dev teams, but it wasn't good for the dev teams, and it wasn't good for the audience. It wasn't good for the player or the customer. So the people who had all the power got what they wanted. So it made a lot of money, but everybody else lost. And it was like, that's not good. That's not what we want. We want the players to win. We want the developers to win. We want the leaders, the senior leaders, frankly, to have to work a little bit harder, in my opinion. Like that's how you develop a good system when you're in an unknown creative-based space, like a knowledge work space. You need to maximize the effectiveness and efficiency of your developers, and you need to let the leaders be the ones who kind of have to play a little bit of catch-up and figure out how to operate in that system. Because if you do it the other way, you end up pretending you know more than you do. So anyway, all of these things, generic solution to a specific problem. All the techniques, like I've used so many of them, and they're all helpful when they're helpful. And they're also can be not helpful when they're not helpful. Like if you give me a backlog of, you know, 500 items or something, And I go, got it. The tool I know to solve this is poker planning. And I just go like, oh my gosh, really? We're going to spend how long a period of time going through one by one? Let's do a quick affinity map and then do a priority stack and then poker plan the top 20. Because those are the next ones that are coming and those are the ones we really need to gain visibility on. Or let's figure out which ones while we're doing an affinity map that we need to, that have question marks around them. Like we'll put a little question mark on it while we do it. And then let's just look at all those together and see where the unknowns are, see why we put question marks on them. There are ways to get to an equally effective outcome in a lot less time. But if you only knew one tool and you just apply it rampantly, you're going to hurt a lot of people. Because you know, it's that whole thing. Like if all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And I feel like that's where agility has made some mistakes. Or rather, people's implementation of what they thought agility was.
Yeah, we also talked about both agility and lean practices. And you did a very good example of something without, I think, ever using the term agility or lean in the whole podcast. You know, the one you did about basically estimating your game.
Yep.
And I think you very well described in that podcast how, you know, the kind of typical practices that, you know, most producers use, you know, when they break things down into molecules, you know, apply hours and then try to aggregate up, you know, what you really end up with is a false sense of precision.
Yes.
And what you really want to do instead is to optimize for accuracy, you know, and you describe, you know, well in this podcast, you know, how to do that. And when I listened to that, you know, I couldn't help thinking, okay, there's probably people listening to you, who's thinking, well, who's actually doing that? What does that look like in practice? But I mean, I was just coming back from, we had, you know, Gamescom the other week, and I was just having a long lunch with, you know, one of our favorite, you know, customers, and they actually go all the way on this. You know, they only measure throughput, which is basically what you're recommending there, you know, and they don't even put the mm-hmm. estimates in the backlog. They only measure throughput.
Yep.
And it really works. You know, my lunch was with the CEO and he was like, you know, my head of production, he kind of always gets our estimates right. We do deliver on our milestones what we said we're going to deliver. You know, the stuff he's doing, it's really working. And I was like, I know. He's using, you know, control shots in favor and he's measuring the throughput, you know, using, you know, the kind of built-in tools. So I think, you know,
I love it.
Yeah. And I mean, this is something which is not like per se a favorite thing. It's really more of a, you know, practice. And then, you know, it's a little bit connected to favorite because it's optimized. It's designed, you know, for you to do this. But it's one of those that makes such a big difference, because if you do something in the more traditional way, okay, then you have the massive amount of manual work to create those piles of tickets with hourly estimates. And that's either done, you know, by a producer or the producers like micromanaging the team to do it. And I don't think anyone really appreciates the practice of, you know, breaking things into molecules and putting in hours. So there's the cost of spending a ton of time on it. And then after you've done that massive exercise, you're still ending up with something which is not going to be very accurate, you know. And then, you know, I mean, the question you want to answer is, you know, when is this game going to be done? Or more precisely, you know, when we reach, you know, our closed alpha, you know, what kind of, you know, features and assets are we going to have, you know, and, you know, how many people and how much money is this going to take? You know, those questions are, you know, very, very important. I mean, they're important if you have, you know, a venture capital investor, but they're also important if you're a studio within a publisher. And they're basically always important. So you know, being able to do a good job from a production point of view, this is something, this is like a massive question. And
it's a huge opportunity. Yeah. It's a huge opportunity in game.
And I've been thinking a little bit, of, you know, why. I mean, I'm happy that, for example, this particular customer is making good use of, you know, the favorable control chart in our dashboards. But I think the core problem is actually simply education, because most producers, I mean, they actually never seen a control chart. So I think it's just pure educational. And
I think you're right. Most of the producers I interact with, they have a couple tools. That is how somebody taught them how to do this. I mean, it's one of the reasons I started the company with Aaron several years ago, and why I'm continuing it today is I still look out at the industry and see producers and leaders generally in game development who are not trained to be producers or leaders and have had to figure everything out, and the quality of their mentors and their own ability to go out and discover other bits of what works and what doesn't are huge barriers to their overall effectiveness. And, you know, this is, again, like the target of my podcast is people who are frustrated with solving the wrong problems. You're in there, you're doing all the things you're supposed to be doing, you think, but you know that like this isn't leading to the outcome you want. That is so common. And different, like some people they just accept, okay, cool, this is what I do. My job is to, I don't know, tinker and Jira all day. Mess with the Excel spreadsheet to the nth degree. But there's other people out there going like, why, this isn't helping. How would I actually help? And that's a really hard question in game development. That's a really hard question in software development. You see this all the time. I guarantee you see this all the time. Talking to people and talking about Favreau and helping them kind of integrate and think about stuff in a better way. Like they're focused on the wrong problems because the tool is focused on the wrong problems because they've been taught to focus on the wrong problems. It's so easy to get caught with the complexity of what we have to do, not catch the nuance, to not realize what actually matters, and to fill 8 hour day after 8 hour day after 8 hour day with the stuff that's not moving the needle.
I have a practice that I'm coaching producers on right now. I don't know if you would agree with this or not, but I'll share it with you because I find that there's a little bit of like kind of like a bridging the gap kind of challenge. So you know, when I tell about, you know, the throughput stuff, often I find that they're like, well, that sounds great, but it's too far from, you know, how we do things today. So, what I'm recommending right now is to, you're probably going to have quite a few workflows, in your favor. So you're automatically going to get control charts on those if you just, click on that. So you have it anyways. So what I say is that, you know, when in your, you know, various, feature backlogs and asset backlogs, you know, I would say, okay, so still do your estimates. So let's say that you estimated things in ideal days or. God, hopefully not hours, but maybe,
but whatever, you're estimating somehow.
Some kind of estimates. So now instead of, you know, coming up with that estimate in the old way you did it, that was probably quite work intensive. And simply take the number you're getting from your control chart. I would typically pick the median to just avoid the extremes. And you only need, you don't need that much time, you know, just a few weeks, you know, you're going to get a decent number enough. And so let's say that your number is going to be, well, to make, a character type asset, it's typically, I'm just throwing in a number now, 14 days. Okay, we'll put in 14 days on all of those. Okay. Now you have an estimate which is based upon your throughput metrics instead of the way you did before. Most likely that's actually going to be more accurate. And then if there's someone in your organization, typically more senior, is going to say, well, I need to see these numbers in my backlog, you can be like, well, fine, I have it. And I've been basing it on empirical data here. And the effort that you need. So basically you're getting a number which is most likely going to be way more accurate. And you needed to spend way less effort, and you're going to make everyone in your teams much happier that they didn't have to, you know, do that exercise of, you know, putting in, very granular estimates for you to be able to have that. So that's one of the things that I'm doing right now, and I don't know, it seems to work.
Yeah, I think there's so many little things like that. One of the ones that I started saying probably 7 years ago, I think it was 7 years ago, someone was having trouble with that stand up again, you know, and it's really common to have issues with stand ups. And I just said, okay, the stand ups were getting too bloated. They weren't talking about the right things. No one was getting any much value out of them. And I said, okay, look, you're a team. And this was a large team. It was, you know, I don't know, 20 something people all working together. Trying to solve a really challenging problem of like, how is a character going to work in the context of the game? And I said, are things changing every day inside of this team? And he was like, yeah, stuff's changing every day. It's cool.
So that means that there is information that would be valuable for the team to generally understand and know about. That's happening pretty regularly. And he's like, yeah, okay, cool. What if you just made the stand up? Let's try to figure out what those things are and talk about the most important 15 minutes of stuff we can every day. And he was like, oh, I've never thought about it that way. And to me, that's one, makes a ton of sense based on how he was taught and trained and what he experienced. And two, it made me sad because that's it. That's what the stand-up is about. The stand-up is about talking about the most important things we need to talk about for 15 minutes and then tabling and immediately or potentially immediately having other conversations that spin out from that we need to continue to have so that we know that we're working on the most important things and we're helping each other out as we do that. Like we're doing that in an effective way, in an efficient way. Like this is what the stand-up is about. And if you're doing a bunch of other stuff, of course you're annoyed, but it's so like what you just said with the throughputs, another example of this. This doesn't have to be a bloated meeting that runs on and on and on, where everybody again either answers three questions or we toss a ball around or someone's taking note, whatever. Like one person sitting at a board moving tickets on a something or other. Like this isn't the point of this is that we talk about the most important 15 minutes every day. The point of estimation, typically, there's two primary ones, but typically it's we want some predictability into the future that has value to the business. And it does. It definitely does. A secondary one is we share an understanding of the complexity of the work that we're doing. That's what you're trying to do. Those are the key elements. If you're doing something with estimation and you're not getting predictability, I don't care how precise or granular or anything you are. And that's where the beauty of what you were talking about with a throughput, like, hey, look, yeah, you can put the numbers in, but also just track your throughput. Like, this is going to take you less time. It's going to save the team time. You still have the thing to send to hire. Everybody just saved time and you're getting more value because your numbers are going to be right more often because you're actually comparing them to historical data. You can actually track stuff over time rather than this all just being sort of blind guesses that are usually wrong. So anyway, I love what you said. And I think there's so many of those around so many aspects of this where we're missing the point.
I hope you liked that interview. If you did, you know what to do. Share it on your favorite social media so others can learn from the Favor community.